Happening now, we'd like to welcome our viewers from across North America and around the world. This is the EdTech Situation Room, episode 315 for January the 3rd, 2024. My name is Wes Fryer, and I am coming to you from just outside Charlotte, North Carolina in Matthews, where I am a media literacy and STEM middle school teacher, and so excited to have a three-way split screen tonight. I will throw it to my normal co-host, and then we'll introduce our special guest. How is Dr. Jason Neifer tonight?
Good evening, Dr. Fryer. I'm well. I'm joining you tonight from the Neifer parent basement, so it's the sign of success that I am broadcasting live from my parents' basement in Great Falls, Montana. I'm here spending the first week with my parents of the new year, and in fact, I got to see some colleagues today that I don't usually get to see in north central Montana, so it's a real pleasure to be here.
All right, and what do you do during your day job?
I am the executive director of the Montana Digital Academy, which is Montana State Virtual School, located on the beautiful University of Montana campus, located in western Montana in the great town of Missoula.
Awesome. Awesome. And joining us from the other side of the state, I think, is it Dr. Heather Kaiser?
Yes, it is.
That's what I thought. I thought that we had three doctors in the house. So welcome, Heather. We're so excited to have you join us. Tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Thank you both. I am on the other side, as you said, of North Carolina in Fayetteville, North Carolina, where I teach fifth grade by day for our virtual academy here in Cumberland County. And then I adjunct professor for instructional technology at Methodist University here in town. So excited to be joining you. Thrilled to have been invited to take part in some of your recent playdate activities, and can't wait to talk about some of these interesting things that are evolving in the world of education.
Absolutely. Well, it was an invigorating. Well, we're gonna debrief the event a little bit, but it was invigorating to just get to share a little bit and learn some things. And I think that it's really, really exciting for me to have a bit of a taste of the excitement from the early days of Web 2.0 in the sort of mid to late 2000s, when, you know, blogging was going on and there were really a lot fewer people online. But with the Fediverse and what I guess is now, some people are just calling the social web, Mastodon, Blue Sky, Threads, these different things. There's so much power for us to be able to connect and collaborate. And how cool for us to get to have this meeting, right? I mean, here we are, you know, three different places, and there's no way we would be having this on a Wednesday night, you know, as a face-to-face meeting. So can you tell us a little bit about your adjunct work? Are you teaching pre-service teachers? Are you teaching librarians? What's your role?
I work with both undergrad and graduate students. And here in North Carolina, we have residency to licensure pathway also. So these are people who have degree programs and other life experiences who are coming to education by way of an alternative path. So I work with them as well. And my focal area is instructional technology. So I'm working with them in regard to methods of infusing instructional technology into their classrooms.
That is great. That is great. You know, I applied to about 35 different places before we ended up landing here in Charlotte. And I thought higher ed was where I would return. But I have, adjuncted at several different institutions and am, still interested in that world. And Jason, you've taught, obviously, at the University of Montana. Did you adjunct other places, too, or was it just University of Montana?
I've also adjuncted at my undergraduate alma mater, which is Carroll College, what I like to call the MIT of Helena, Montana. I was a competitive debater there, centuries ago. And I had an opportunity to teach in their communications department. I actually taught classes on social media. So, and I just found out I am going to be teaching the summertime version of the graduate ed tech course at UM this summer. So it's been, it's been 10 years since I taught a graduate level class. So it's exciting to be back with that particular group of scholars. And in, you know, the era of AI, suddenly, it's happening so fast that, Heather, I would imagine that, your syllabus, you know, changes sometimes hour by hour.
That has been a tricky thing to prepare for these courses, for sure.
Wow. And our play day just invigorated me even today, getting some lessons together with just different ideas, you know, and it is just I don't even almost have the words for what it's like having access to these kinds of tools, thinking about the creative sorts of things, in some cases, aspirational things I've wanted to do. It just, wow, there's so much to process. Well, Jason, for those that may be joining us for the first time, this is our first show of 2024. What are we allegedly going to be about tonight?
Well, we've scoured the internet looking for information to share that we can kind of shoot through the educational technology prism. And of course, you can always check out our links at our website, edtechsr.com/links, where you can go to our massive size Google document, which probably has more links we haven't talked about than links we have because of the number we typically collect. But tonight we have several topics. I would imagine AI will dominate the discussion tonight. And if we get past that, we will also be doing some tech correction news, social media news, Apple news, Microsoft news, media literacy. And then we'll end tonight on our Geeks of the Week, or a geeky thing we could share with our vast podcast audience. Dr. Fryer, I'll defer to you. Where shall we start tonight?
Well, why don't we go ahead and debrief the playdate? Talk a little bit about what it was, our experiences in terms of just, you know, what we took out of it, what we thought was good, what we thought was bad. And then maybe we can think about, you know, what another one might look like. I have set up for Saturday, January 20th, a face-to-face, 3 hour in the morning AI edition playdate at our school. I've got to get the word out about that. But I, you know, this is an invigorating professional development model. So would you Heather, how did you find out about it? And had you ever done something like this? How did you find the experience? How would you describe it, I guess, to someone else who'd never heard of this before?
I think I found out about it on Threads. I do. I think I saw it on Threads, which, is a whole other topic, right?
Yes.
But yeah, I'm pretty sure I saw your invite on Threads and said, ooh, that sounds good. That's a great way to spend a little bit of my winter break. I am so geeky at heart that, this is my passion, right? Education is absolutely my passion. So during break, I like being able to have the time freedom to pick and choose what I want to be doing for my own professional growth. And networking and collaborating is a favorite of mine. So when I saw this, it was a natural fit because you were bringing people together in real time from all over the place. So we could share really kind of cutting edge, on the cusp, the bleeding edge, I think I heard you say during the play date of what's going on in AI for education right now. And it's really something.
Jason, had you participated in a playdate before or just heard about these before?
I just heard about them. I mean, and it is kind of a riff on the EdCamp model, which is, you know, one of the reasons why I like them. I participate in several EdCamps, but I know when we're considering doing a couple of these face-to-face at the University of Montana in the springtime, and I just think there's something about being in a room with your colleagues or even folks that are maybe a couple clicks away from the work that you do on a day-to-day basis, sitting down at a table and playing with something. And I just absolutely love the model. And I know that my guess is that and I don't know if we'll be able to spark that or not, but I think returning to that notion that it's a valuable professional learning experience to be in the physical space or virtual space, whatever you can pull off with your colleagues to talk about interesting stuff that's going on. And I think AI is very well versed in making that a reality.
The last few summers, like I think the past three summers, I've participated in what has been called the Summer Institute in Digital Literacy. It's changing this year. It's still part of the Media Education Lab, but they're actually going to do it as a hybrid. But I love so many things about it, but they've talked about real time, anytime. Because sometimes we lose people with asynchronous and synchronous, and people are like, I don't even know what you're talking about. But the immediacy that comes from a real-time event can be a good catalyst to, like, okay, I'm going to focus on, you know, this now and taking that opportunity. I will say that I felt guilty, and certainly, with whatever one is I do, the past playdates I've participated in, and the playdate started really with Chicago area teachers who came back from ISTE, the International Society of Technology and Education Conference, with a plethora of tools and, like, you know, heads overflowing with ideas. And they said, how are we going to, you know, have time to process and really get to know some of these tools. And they said, let's just get together and play and not have, you know, sort of lectures and PowerPoints. They used resource guides and then broke into, you know, different rooms to play with different tools. And if we could go back, I think I would like to do that for at least 10 minutes. The resource guide is kind of like a quick start guide. So you've never used Poe.com or you've never used, you know, Anthropic's Claude or whatever. And then giving some prompts and some suggestions. But what we ended up doing was kind of doing a round table of stories. And I found that to be really inspiring. I think, Heather, didn't you talk about the using it for game-based learning and scenarios and things like that?
Yeah, for gamification specifically.
Yes. I did,
kind of mashing up a couple of ideas there. I've been taking since last spring ChatGPT and prompting it with some information about an upcoming topic. Like if I'm teaching quadrilaterals or if we're working with a story that's about national parks, and getting ChatGPT to translate that into some short segments, short storylines, if you will, prompting it for quests that can be then transposed into the quest version of Classcraft, which is one of the top features in my book in Classcraft, which is really all about gamifying your classroom and getting students to want to level up, want to do the work because it levels them up, right? And so it's just a really heavy lift to write a storyline to then go along also with the assignments and tasks you want students to complete, because this is kind of, it's like two parallel things happening there. But with some AI in ChatGPT and the ability to take some of these tools like Canva for educators will let you put in some text and get some images back. I could get some images that went along with my quadrilaterals quest or my national parks quest and just sort of smash all that together like the best of us do with that app smashing. And it's really worked out well.
So you have a book on gamification?
No, I don't.
Okay, I thought you had just said. I thought you had talked about. I was like, I need to add that to my reading list. Well, how did you get introduced to gamification? Because that it is something I've aspirationally wanted to do for years. Sure. And I'll just say right now, today I wanted to do a culminating activity tomorrow with my kids with Minecraft. Something with a castle, something with snow. I've done these before on, you know, different kinds of like midwinter break camps and things. But I mentioned this to my colleague Travis today. I've been treating ChatGPT as like a wise, fully sentient and even more sentient, whatever, even more capable human being than I am. Sure. I don't think, now, is it? I don't know, but I'm treating it that way. And so I just sort of laid it out. Hey, this is what I want to do. And it gave me great ideas. And so on our document, and I can drop the link, under AI, I put a section called experiments. And the third one right now is Minecraft Castle Build Challenge. And that's, if you don't generate an image with ChatGPT, it's just text, you can have a share link where you can actually share the entire conversation. So anyway, that's just my conversation. But my lesson tomorrow is because of that and because of you sharing that idea, which is so cool. I mean, because I've wanted to do gamification, but you say it's a big lift. Oh my gosh, it's huge to think about all the planning and all the detail and then the images and then, you know, the pieces.
Right. And you don't want your storyline to be too far away from what you're doing. At least I don't want it to be too far away from what we're doing with the students. Classcraft comes with fully developed storylines that you can just utilize parallel to what you're doing if you wanted to. And I've done that before. But this, I feel, is just so much more natural for using with the students. And you asked me how I came on it. I can't say for sure where I came upon gamification because it's like so many things. People will ask me. In fact, for a while I did a podcast called How Does She Do It? Because teachers in my building would always ask, how did you learn? Or how did you do? I have a really big professional learning network. Kind of like when you ask how did you come up with the play date? How'd you know about it? I had to really stop and think because I spend time in places.
Lots of places, right. Lots of influences. It's great, though.
But I can tell you that Classcraft came to me through my son, who is a teacher now. He's been teaching 6 years, and he mentioned Classcraft to me a number of years ago and told me about what it was capable of doing and why he thought it was great. He was using it with his history students at the high school level, and I checked it out, and I thought, wow, this is pretty great.
Fantastic. So, fantastic. Yeah. Well, if you don't have another one, we can consider Classcraft your Geek of the Week.
There you go.
And Heather, do I understand correctly, you're a fifth grade online teacher? You teach virtually?
I do now, yeah. So I'm a 26-year veteran teacher, but I've been online with students at our academy for 4 years now. So
yeah, that's you want to talk about someone that I'm sure is busy. It's a early middle school, upper elementary online teacher. I know what you must go through to do that. But I think you're making a really important point too about I don't, and I'm starting, as I mentioned during the play date, that I now identify myself as an AI centrist, in part because I think there's a lot of threat to these tools, but there's a lot of possibility, and I think educators need to find a way in the middle. But I think you're highlighting one of the really amazing things that these tool sets can do for teachers is that, you know, there are a lot of interesting, innovative, thoughtful ways that you can set up a classroom to make it more interactive, but it is an extremely time intensive exercise to do that. And having a vision of what you want your classroom to look like and then pulling in, you know, some of these really amazing generative tools, I think is such a fabulous model for, you know, keeping to what philosophically you want to do in the classroom, while at the same time understanding that you can't spend 20 hours a day prepping your classes. And so I think that's really an inspirational way to start looking at these tools.
Mm-hmm. Heather, did you start your online role during COVID and did it just continue, or how did that come to be?
Yeah, I did actually. Our district, though, from the very beginning, instituted a full school, right? It's K-12. We're actually two separate, but joint sort of, like, we lead into the next if they choose to continue with it. So we're K-5 and 6-12 with full staffing in both areas. And yeah, they it was just an extension. It was timing. Like we were ready to do it in our district anyway, right? It wasn't a thing that was going to be, oh, we're going to be a school within a school model, or we're going to do this extension and hybrid and things. Some of our schools did some hybrid models for a while, but we were always a completely standalone option from that point forward.
Mm-hmm. Man, that is great. Well, there's a lot I'd love to learn about that and where North Carolina is with that. Is there anything you want to ask Jason? You're really with the EdTech Yoda of the North. So, you know, when it comes to like west of the Mississippi, like people just defer the questions about distance ed to Jason. It just all comes to his inbox. So he's looking forward to Bard, you know, parsing that for him.
Yeah. Well, what I would say, Heather, is that, I mean, what I know you can provide insight on is that it's difficult to engage kids in a virtual environment, and that fifth grade level, you know, does require a lot of human intensity despite the online environment. So I guess I'm not going to provide anything. I'm going to ask you a question. So what are your favorite strategies for, you know, dealing with the juggling of balls that teaching an online environment to that age of students has become?
Yeah, right. So I think having a really solid LMS is key, right? Still having plenty of curriculum tools to draw from and getting materials in those students' hands, not just a Chromebook in their hands or an iPad in their hands in their homes. We've done a pretty solid job of supplying the technology and doing distribution of materials. And I think that that's making it successful for our school, making it a sustainable model for our families to continue on with. And so kindergarten, fifth grade, 12th grade, that part there matters the most, is that they have the tools that they need, and that we're also helping the people in the homes with them that we call their learning coaches know how to navigate and what the expectations are and what their role is in supporting their children. So that, more so than any other gadgety type thing I could mention. I could talk about all the different tools, right? We're for sure using all kinds of things. You can see some of the things I've got going on and behind me to have a semblance of like you're in a classroom, yeah. Feel for the kids, that all of those things are important. But having, I liked how Wes said earlier that real time and that any time. In fact, I have what I call a learning guide that I provide for my students every day within the learning management system. And when we're done, I'm going back and I'm changing it because I really like that. Mine right now says during class and on your own, but I really like the phrasing that you used. I like that phrase of real time right now. And then get this done anytime. Mm-hmm.
You know, I think I've mentioned this probably on the show that for many folks, COVID was a deep dive into educational worst practice for online learning, because a lot of folks were thrown straight into the deep end without maybe even any experience themselves being an online learner as a student in a class, but then having to teach. It's not a secret, like, I actually really enjoyed the opportunity for that, the rest of that year and the time that we were at home to be at home and to also provide support to our teachers. I guess I had stepped down as technology director at that time, but I was a half-time instructional coach. Anyway, there was, it was such an opportunity to help people who were in, in some cases dire need of assistance, but you know, not optimal, not something that I think any of us would want to have happen again. Our daughter, we have both our daughters home, and one is in college, one's a college graduate. And, you know, we're talking about this, we're like, oh, I sure hope we don't have COVID again. Because the older one had, I think, 3 of her years really impacted in college by COVID a lot. But, I guess that's a good homework assignment to give to everyone. I learned when I was a director of distance learning, was fascinated to learn from the, now I'm going to have a senior moment. What's the online school that is everywhere, that, you know, always has their advertising right off of the interstate?
Connections, K-12 Stride.
This is a university though. This is to get graduate degrees. University of Phoenix. So at TXDLA, the Texas Distance Learning Association conference years ago, they had a keynote speaker, because it's kind of controversial in that particular context with a lot of public ed and public university. Oh my gosh, University of Phoenix. But it really struck me, their first thing they have everybody do who's going to teach with them is you're a student and you go into a class and you get to experience what they consider to be best practice pedagogy, you know, and then you're going to use that to build your own skill set to teach online as well. So I think that's probably, I don't know how many schools ask that, but it probably depends on age and, but you can't make assumptions, right? Just because someone is younger doesn't mean that they've, ooh, you've had all these, you know, great online and hybrid learning experiences and you're ready to replicate them yourself as a teacher. I mean, that's a pretty big jump.
It is. Yeah. In fact, I think one of the things that kept coming up in the early stages was it didn't matter how ready the educator felt or didn't feel in those circumstances either, because the children and the families weren't ready. They might be tech savvy on their games and things, but that's not the same as learning from home over the computer in some way, shape, or form.
Absolutely.
It's not. And so there was a lot that had to happen. They needed to learn how to navigate a learning management system. So even though I say having a solid learning management system is key, having the systems in place to help those learners and those families know how to utilize that learning management system, I'm still faced with that on the regular, right? We're years into it now, and I'm still faced with students who, if you are not really, really careful and design your learning management system well, they won't navigate it well.
Yeah. And that's something I would love, just using Canvas for face-to-face teaching. And that's, I don't know, maybe we'll find ways to do that in school, or there's ways that we could reach out and have meetups or chances to do that. Cause like seeing another teacher's Canvas set up, the way that visuals are being used, you know, this is a shock, I'm sure, but my middle school kids just generally don't like to read. And I have very detailed, thorough instructions and trying to, you know, get them and sometimes read them out loud, but representing ideas in simple ways, visually, and the design, I think it can be really beneficial to see how, especially folks like you all who are very steeped in doing this online, because I think there's a lot of benefit the face-to-face teachers who are using an LMS can have to think about how we're presenting information and trying to help students apprehend the goals and the task and all that.
Heather, I'm a little scared to ask this, but what LMS are you using?
We are in Canvas.
Okay. So interesting, because we're moving to Canvas this coming year. So it's good to hear that you're having a good experience with that. I am a long time, by long time, I mean like 20 year plus Moodle guy. So our whole state is moving to Canvas. And so it's good to hear that you feel like the tool set's doing you justice. That's great.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I am familiar with Moodle. So yeah. I think it's interesting when, and you'll notice it, I'm sure, when you make the shift. The part that I find the trickiest is do you set it up when you think about that user experience, right? Which there's no negating, user experience is important. But when we're trying to make it user friendly for littles and then your mid grades, and where do you start to transition that and help them to navigate? And I find it very interesting that even at the university level, the number of people who simply want to rely on their calendar and their to-do lists in the learning management system, and they don't want to navigate your modules. They don't want to navigate all the pages. They just want it succinct, and they're missing things if they do that, because not everything can get embedded on a to-do list and a calendar. Yeah. And that right there is, that's a tricky thing.
Mm. Well, let's circle back to the play date. What did you all enjoy about it? Is there anything that you would change? And I'll say it just at the beginning. We just, you know, created a Zoom meeting, put an invitation out there. It was interesting because this person didn't join, but we had someone who I don't think was a first English necessarily speaker as far as what they had written, but they wanted to share, but they wanted to, you know, talk about, you know, needing a job and things like that. You never know what's going to happen when you put something on Facebook Marketplace or, you know, out on Threads or wherever. But extending an invitation for anybody who wanted to share a story about an AI tool allowed us kind of in an Ed Campy app smackdown way, but I think it was deeper because it wasn't just here's the tool, but it was here's how I've used it, here's how it's been impactful. That, aside from introductions, kind of took the most of our time. So what did you all think, and any thoughts on changes or modifications to it, the format?
I was really excited about Notebook LM that you were sharing, Jason, because I had seen it, but I hadn't been successful at it wasn't that I couldn't locate it. I couldn't get it to get active until after you talked about it. Then I found another way to go in on a different account and actually start to play with it. So if you would talk more about that, I would love to hear a little more because that really intrigued me, the way that you were using Notebook LM.
Sure. Well, I keep thinking in terms of, you know, when we start to hear very dismissive terms about artificial intelligence, it's hallucinates, or the information is bad, or it's not research based. You know what the sources are. And that's all true. But that's, you know, really the first experience in something like ChatGPT. You walk up to it, you ask it informational questions, it gives you answers. And that's both very stunning functionality, but it's also very basic. And what I think is becoming increasingly important as we start to roll these tools out in classrooms and in learning environments is that there's still a lot of room for expertise, right? And using your sources and your information, and then using the large language models in order to process it. So what Notebook LM does is that it's a Google-based tool. It's considered to be in beta right now, I think, or maybe even called an experiment. And as both Wes and I have complained about much in the past, Google is famous for taking useful tools and just pulling the rug from under them. So I hope that this is the start of a tool that will be in many generations of tools that are very much like it, but it's a really simple interface. You just go to notebooklm.google.com and you start a notebook and you can share three different kinds of resources. You can upload a PDF. You can point it towards a Google Doc in your Google Doc system, or you can copy and paste plain text. And then from there, you can basically just chat with your stuff. And so what I've used it a lot for is I'm going through the process and I'm journaling a little bit about it, which may turn into, I don't know, an article or a blog post or something at some point. But I'm using these tool sets to write an online high school world geography class. It's a class we need. It's my content area. I taught that almost every year of my classroom career, so I'm very well versed in the content itself. And we will involve a couple of content teachers in our institution to continue to have that teacher eye on all the resources. But I've managed to create in the last couple of weeks basically experts to talk to brainstorm. So I found several geography pedagogy books. So in other words, methods texts that I can use and be able to talk back and forth with. I picked up every open source geography text I could find or set of geography lessons and turned them into training data for another notebook so that I could brainstorm ideas back and forth. And then I also put every standards document I can find, both my state standards and also national standards, in another document. And between the three of them, I can start off in a development process to essentially go through an exercise where I'm referring to several different resources all at once, in order to write, vet, rewrite, reconsider, expand anything that I'm writing as part of that. And Notebook LM has another cool feature that it will tell you which text it picked it up from and then literally point you to the text that it's quoting or it's drawing that information from. And, you know, that it, and in a lot of ways, this would have been a magical tool 30 years ago when I was picking up my undergraduate degree in political science and history, where I had a lot of classes that were pretty knowledge-based. There's a lot of more higher-level learning things at the end of the classes and in upper division courses. I know that a lot of college classes in those areas are a little different than they used to be 30 years ago. But if you're a student right now, or if you need a thought partner, I think Notebook LM is really magical. And I if you are in a school district and you can talk your tech director into turning this tool on in your Google piece, especially if you teach something like an AP class or a dual credit class, wow. I think it's a really shocking and interesting tool set.
Can I ask, if I'm understanding it right, it basically pushes that boundary that ChatGPT has of 2021, because anything you can put in now, it works with. So I think that's pretty powerful right there. Yeah.
Well, and using my undergraduate example, you're on mute, by the way, Dr. Fryer, using my undergraduate example, you know, if you're taking notes in a class, right, and the way I used to do it would be the way I do it today too if I were an undergraduate student, is that I would take notes in writing first, because I do buy into that notion that writing things down with a pen has some advantages over typing it. But then my second in engagement with that would be typing those. So that's the second way I would study those, is not just reviewing them, but typing them to help better commit them to my working and long-term memory. But once you have that document, you just share it inside of Notebook LM every time you make adjustments. And it doesn't matter what the text is, it will, you know, essentially refer to it on a regular basis. So if you want to go create a Google Doc with 25 different modern research articles in it, for example, you could do that. Or, and the one kind of persnickety thing is that PDFs have to be OCR-able, so you have to run them through like Adobe Acrobat, for example, to make sure that they have alt text for all the text in there. But that's pretty easy to do in 2024. But once you do that, you're absolutely right. You can have as recent of a resource as you want, and you control the resources. And again, I've only spent maybe 10, maybe 12 hours of playing with this tool, but everything, I haven't seen it hallucinate yet. It seems to be very dedicated to using the resources that you're giving it. And you can do up to 20 per notebook. And that just seems like such a way to, especially if you are, information savvy, have some media literacy going for you, it would be a really easy way, I think, to really dive deep into any topic.
I'm going to drop a link here into the chat, and then I'll put this on the Google Doc, and I'm glad I just found this. This is Politico from December 30th, 2023. A new kind of AI copy can fully replicate famous people. The law is powerless. And it tells the story of Martin Seligman. I don't know how to say his name, an influential American psychologist, and he's 81 now, and how basically in China, that one of his former students, an old graduate student, had created a Chinese virtual Seligman. And they can completely interact with any of his work. It will respond in very authentic ways. And we've heard about chatbots and this kind of thing, but the idea of being able to take a body of work, and Jason, when I read this, I was even thinking like, I think I got like 5,000 posts on my blog. Right. And so, but this is like doable. You could throw all that content into a notebook LM or a custom GPT. And then you could ask the AI, to respond as if it is, you know, this person. The article goes on to basically say like he's happy with it and thinks it's kind of cool. But if he didn't, he really wouldn't be able to do anything legally. So many of these tools live in different countries and, you know, the internet being what it is. They say even if a no-fakes act, which is something I guess Senator Amy Klobuchar has proposed, passed Congress, it would be powerless against the global tide of AI technology. Anyway, fascinating article, and it relates to that. And I think I've maybe said it on the show before, you know, open content, being able to have, here's my entire textbook, or Jason, you're talking about, here's a best practices, you know, social studies, pedagogy textbook. Being able to put those kinds of resources into the model and then say, can you now create a lesson about this topic using that? That is just, that is a specific example of where these AI LLM models, I think, can exceed our cognitive capacity as humans, because we're not going to be able to ingest the quantity of information. And so using those as teaching assistants, as thought partners, that was something else we talked about actually in the play date, that those kinds of phrases I think are important. They can become like records that we play, but if they are constructive and helpful in not just sort of, they're not just dismissive, because we hear a lot of people, I do, being dismissive. Oh, it's just fill in the blank. Oh, I don't have time for that or whatever. But I mean, when you've got sort of a Marvel comic superhero thought partner, you know, who's Iron Man have that's his full AI guy? I don't remember who that is. I'm not a super big Marvel comics, but
you're not that kind of geek is what you're saying.
That guy. Yeah, basically, you know, that you've got that.
And I think too, the notion of the kind of self-learning part of this and, how to empower students that, you know, you're not always going to be able to find your passion in the curriculum that I think you need to learn about, right? I'm a former history teacher. I know that the Federalist era, despite being infinitely interesting to me, isn't going to float the boat of the vast majority of students that I teach. But if we can give students the tools to think about history, and then they can start diving into their own pieces of it to use tools like this to help answer their own questions or set themselves up for success, then that that, in my mind, that's the way we should be evolving instruction to make that happen.
Are you all going to do the Moodle Moot this summer, or is it not? Are you going to do a Canvas Moot?
We are going to go to InstructureCon in Las Vegas in July. It's literally the second week of July, which I think is the hottest week in there. So, delicate Western Montana wildflower that I am, I'll just need to stay inside and suck down liquids. But I would like to. It's the same week, I think, as the University of Montana, Montana Digital Academy Innovation Runs Through It conference. So there's just so many opportunities to hang out with people and talk fun stuff. But I hope to go back there because it's a really amazing event.
Wow. Are there any ed camps going on, Heather, in North Carolina anymore?
You know, every once in a while you'll see one crop up, but that it's one of those things that I feel really did fade away to an extent. Unfortunately, it was a casualty of the pandemic, if you ask me, which is really unfortunate, which is, I think, part of why your play date spoke to me so much, because I miss them. But we do have NC Ties coming up in March, and we're back to face-to-face on those kinds of things here in North Carolina. So I'm excited about that. And maybe eventually we get back to seeing more ed camps again.
Yeah. Well, one of the possible collaborations that we think about, because one of the encouragements I want to give to people is we've got a link to the archived resources rather than set up a separate Google site. One of the things I've learned over time is it can be beneficial to not be fancy with your Google site and do this thing called a CNAME, where you like make it go to a custom domain that you pay GoDaddy or somebody for. So it's a long address. It's a sites.google.com, but it's edtechplaydate. And then I made it for Charlotte, but I went ahead and just archived the resources that we shared. I think if anybody else is interested in doing this, the previous playdates that Jenny Majera and others organized, they would collaboratively share, hey, here's your, GIMKit reference guide or whatever the tool was. Mm-hmm. I think that those like short little Google Docs that would be an intro to Claude, intro to Notebook LM, whatever, would be a valuable thing to share. The other thing that occurs to me is like just the short stories, because when I've gone to ed camps, it really depends on who's in the room, and who's ready to share and expertise and things like that. Sometimes people can be very frustrated because they go and I'm ready to learn. And some of that's they're used to sit and get kind of thing. But I'm thinking that a combination of several people sharing stories of here's what I've used, here's what I've done, but then having the time to go and play. We could have done that, on Zoom. And that's something else with the media, with the education lab in the Summer Institute, is they've really modeled some good practices with like check-ins and things like that, but then also breakouts and having breakouts where you go make something with people and then you come back. And so it certainly could be, I think, better in terms of the playing, because that really is the essential part. But if anybody is interested in this, the original website for EdTech Playdate, I think that Jenny Majera had created, it's offline. I had to go to the Wayback Machine from the Internet Archive. Yeah, I mean, it's cool. So it's there. We had one that we made in Oklahoma City that was just, I think we had three different play dates. We had like a Minecraft one that we did at a school where we just played with Minecraft. And we had students and adults and teachers there. That was really fun. But anyway, that was just one of the thoughts was we could potentially collaborate on that. And that if I was going to do this again, which I am going to do face-to-face, but do it again virtually too, I think I would try to have some of that where it's just not all the sharing time. But I mean, who knew we were going to have people from the Isle of Wight in the UK and from New Zealand? I mean, wasn't like that took me back to 2005. I mean, that is just.
And it was great to have a cultural perspective. I thought that was really important. And you probably know who it was that shared it and which person it was from there. But what I took away from it was we're really, westernized. These things are still these AI tools are really westernized because the colloquialisms and the culture that other places bring is not represented yet.
That was Nat Free, and she is a teacher in New Zealand and talked about the Maori language and the Maori culture, which is the native indigenous culture to New Zealand. I happened to be an exchange student to New Zealand when I was in high school and have some connections there. It is, you know, it's not Finland, but New Zealand has a fantastic education program and there's so much for us to learn from them. And I absolutely agree. Because one of the things we didn't really talk about, and we probably should, is bias. And, you know, some of those aspects that as we are educated ourselves, not only about tools and how we can use them, there's also a really important, you know, policy and regulatory side to this and sort of citizenship side. And how can we be educated as citizens to try to help inform and, to the degree we can, influence our elected representatives to make reasonable, you know, rules and guidelines and all that for this. So I agree. I thought that was absolutely fascinating. Mm-hmm. Jason, any other thoughts you have about it?
Yeah, I would just say that I still believe that I know the education research complex isn't going to save us from AI, right? That it's practitioners that are going to lead the way here just because of the speed of this. And I'm very grateful for all the folks that are starting to dig down into this and collect data and process that data and give us guidance. But by the time that guidance is available in an implementable form, we're going to have a couple of years of AI exposed classrooms that we need to be very, very thoughtful about. And one of the articles that I intended on sharing tonight, which I think is perfect for my discussion, is that you can now download Microsoft Copilot, which is the ChatGPT-4 based tool onto your smartphone now. And one of the things I noticed when I did exactly that, and you can use that tool without signing in now, which means there is no age limitation anymore if you don't need to sign into the tool to be able to use it. And it is ChatGPT-4. There's a little a slider where you can ask ChatGPT-4 to be available. So now you have essentially free, and Microsoft's version is in some ways a little more functional, in other ways a little less functional than GPT-4, but it also doesn't cost you anything. And even if they get to a point where they start locking it down, apparently a free Microsoft account will unlock the gate to that tool. So if that's the case, then we are in an era where it is available to all students all the time, right, in their pocket. And that's
copilot.microsoft.com.
That's correct. And I will also say that, and in fact, it just was released for iOS the last, I don't know, 48 hours, I think. But it also has the talking feature the GPT-4's app does. Actually, I think 3.5 does this now, too, where you can just talk back and forth with Copilot. And that's a stunning development, because before it was like, well, GPT 3.5 is cute, but if you really want to see the good stuff, then pay your $20 a month and get a GPT-4 account. And of course, for the longest time, those accounts stopped being available. And I think they're still not widely available because of capacity. Well, Microsoft has apparently either fixed that or, you know, because I imagine they're hosting their own version of the model, they have the capacity to scale it worldwide. So now you have access to that, whether or not you are able to pay for it. And so pretending our world has these tools available to all of our students all the time is really the way we need to move into the future. So it's pretty exciting stuff, but also we need to sit down and play with it. And now everyone can. And I think Dr. Fryer just found the app on his phone. So yeah, I think that's probably the most interesting news I've read in the last couple of weeks when it comes to AI.
The web version, copilot.microsoft.com, which I'm just stealing your geek of the week, does require a sign in, but the app, as you said, does not. And there's a little slider, use GPT-4. Why, yes, I would like to use that for free. Okay. Today we played with Canva and AI, Because one of the things this is like last day of class with my students. And I was telling them, I said, of all the things we've learned and talked about, I think AI is going to have a bigger impact on your life. What tools can you use right now to use AI, as a student? We pay for Padlet. So Padlet has the I can't write feature. So interesting to compare last fall 2022's images created by students to this year's, and the quality difference is just pretty stark. But this was so interesting with guardrails. We went into Canva and enabled the magic write, I think, that it has. Mm-hmm. It would not create an image with Taylor Swift. Travis Case is her
Travis Kelce.
Kelce? Okay, see, I don't know anything about sports. So thank you, Jason. This isn't a sports show, folks. If you're here to learn about the NFL, you're in the wrong place. Anyway, so somebody had wanted to make a picture of them. Canva would not do anything with Taylor Swift, but Padlet would. But one of my seventh graders misspelled Taylor Swift's name, and it worked, and it looked like her. So it's crazy. I was like, do y'all know what red teaming is? You're kind of red teaming Canva AI right now.
Wes, I'll say that is a caveat that I ran into in my app smashing to do my quests, creating my images, because I used Canva's text to image, and there were certain things that, and it's really strange to me, some of the things that it says it is not able to generate for safety types of reasons. I think it's, are you sure about that? This seems really basic to me.
That's right. That's right.
Well, and DALL-E, do we know what platforms Canva's based off of? I mean, I'm assuming it's ChatGPT and DALL-E, but I also feel like that other people are able to squeeze more juice out of Canva's AI than I am. I mean, I use Canva for everything else, but I usually go back to DALL-E for that reason. But it's very funny to me that all these tools are starting to get some pretty hardcore rules, but usually you can negotiate some/many of those away. And if you need to understand, you know, what the difference is between a Google search or a massive library of open source photographs or Google images and generative AI, it's that, you know, I'm not supposed to do that for you, but if you ask really nicely or if you use the right words, I will be able to ignore
you. Argue with me, like I've argued with ChatGPT and had to fight in all caps, and I've won.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, and all those kids from split families that are used to negotiating with either mom or dad to try to get what they want, I mean, they're going to have a real edge up in the AI-dominated world. So,
well, as a thought to kind of wrap up the debrief of, and then we're within 8 minutes of the top of the hour, and maybe we can do a couple articles. Maybe we can think about what we would consider to be some of the top tools we've played with. And if we were to say just like four tools, like again, Saturday, January 20th, I don't know if my wife and I will be the only people to come or if there'll be a few other people. I think there'll probably be a few other people come. But, you know, what should we play with? I think it's very important for us to be filters for each other. Dr. Neifer, how many tools are you up to on your Google Doc now for AI tools that you've
70 or 80? It's stupid. Yeah.
See, crazy. But, you know, someone like you who has played with a lot of those tools saying, well, you really should look at, you know, this and this. And I think the classroom focus is super important too, right? I'm teaching middle schoolers. So, you know, a lot of my kids aren't 13. I have a lot of sixth graders. I have sixth, seventh, and eighth. So, I think that would be a valuable thing to think about and maybe, you know, touch base on, in terms of what those tools are. Cause I know for myself, I really appreciate, you know, getting together with Jason and he'll say, oh, you know about such and such? I'm like, what? No, not even tried it. And so that kind of filtering and advice giving and saying, here, you know, play with this. If you haven't played with these, you know, tools, go do that.
I've got two off the top of my head that I think are still fairly new out there. I believe I picked up on them from Eric Kurtz from his 24 Days of AI recently. One is Mizou, M-I-Z-O-U, because it is FERPA compliant. From what I can tell, there is no sign in. And as an educator, going back to the whole, you know, I have 30 fifth graders I work with online. So this tool, one example I'm getting ready to do with my kids, is we're starting an environment topic in science, the different environments, biomes and ecosystems. So there's one called, I've developed called Eco Heroes, Community Protectors. And I've just given Mizu some basic information about the topic on environment that we're learning about. And it's going to host one-on-one conversations. It's a chat bot. And it will have a one-on-one conversation, no sign-in required by my students, to talk with them and find out what they already know on the topic, almost like a KWL, and keep on going. So I'm really excited about the possibilities of Mizu as a chatbot with students of my age range. The other one is so new that I don't think you get your hands on it without going through a demo with them. And then they're really happy to let you start using it. It's called Snorkel, S-O-N-O-R-K-L, Snorkel. And I don't know if either of you have seen that, but this one is really cool from the standpoint that I can put, let's say, a spiral math problem, a math review, right? And my students will solve it however they want to solve it. They can upload an image. They can draw on the dry erase board. They can draw on the whiteboard online. And then they record themselves explaining how they solved the problem. The AI interacts with their recording and at very specific points identifies the strengths and weaknesses of the student's response and does a rubric score for me as the educator. I can then also leave feedback and interact. And of course, it's all based on the input that I generated from the beginning, almost like Notebook LM, right? I give it the problem and I tell it what it is I'm looking for. And I do that one-time setup and then the AI does its magic and sort of serves as a one-on-one teacher tutor with my students on that specific prompt that I've given them. So I'm pretty excited about coming back to the new year with those two brand new tools in my tool belt.
Oh, and it is snorkel.ai. I put it in the chat and then put it on our document down in your Geeks of the Week, Heather. And I think, you know, this is like the future of LLMs. And I heard people talk about this with respect to like law, rather, you know, that it is incredibly powerful, just like it is with Google to have the Omnibar here. Just what do you want to search for? Just put it in. You don't have to use syntax, but to be able to have that power with an open, you know, chat interface and build things. But then when you have a group like this that has built a custom tool for specific purposes and then being able to base it on, you know, particular kinds of pedagogy or research articles or whatever, man, it just, it is this sort of, I tried to describe to my kids that my brain is just kind of exploding with, mm-hmm. with these possibilities and with what, and it's not just, oh, this is possible. It's like, I'm actually solving problems and making things that work and I'm using them in my life. And what a day for visualization, right? For someone who wants to visually communicate. Wow.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well,
I hear neither of them. So thanks, Heather. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Awesome. Okay. Well, do we want to, why don't you just grab an article? I'll grab one and then we'll geek of the week it and have to wrap up the episode. Jason,
I'm actually going to find our article list, because we've been long distracted from that. Hey, this is just something to keep an eye on for this year. And I am excited about this, not because I am a user of these tools, but I think it does represent a great thing forward. So Paul Thurrott's website, Thurrott.com, reported on December 28th that there are new Microsoft devices coming, a Surface Pro 10 and a Laptop 6 in spring. But the reason why I'm excited about it is because they're going to start pushing in the direction of ARM chips. So instead of Intel or Ryzen chips, the kind of x86 or 64-bit processors, Windows is going to start, or Microsoft is going to start heading down the road of ARM-based processors. And although I have a long experience and a lot of respect for Intel chips, I've been a Mac guy again as of late in the last couple of years, and the battery life and the speed of modern-day ARM processors is great, and I would love to see a lot of those advantages come to Windows because Microsoft, in my mind, is behind Apple in that. So that's a little nerdy, but I think that more long-lasting devices are here to come in the next year, and it should mean some interesting things for those that are looking for new computers that have a shelf life of or use life longer than 3 or 4 years.
And maybe less energy consumption. I think we might have covered an article, and I've definitely read about just how much energy is required for every query that we're sending to these AI LLM models. You know, is there climate guilt that we're going to have? Here's a quick
Go ahead, Wes.
Here's a quick one that links to a couple things, and it is a bit of a downer, but it's important. This is a CNBC article that is from December 5th, and the headline is Youth Suicide Rates Rose 62% from 2007 to 2021. Quote, people feel hopeless, one recent grad says. Now, this talks about social media, and it talks about these aspects to social media use, and especially differences in suicide rates among female teens and male teens. There's a whole lot that this links to. But one of them is an article that I would have totally missed, which has probably a very poor headline. And you can tell that this was not written by a journalist because it is like the longest headline we've ever shared here on the EdTech Situation Room. But this is from the National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine on December 13th. Oh gosh. And okay. I think I put the wrong date. This had to be 2023. Yeah. I'll change the date on the doc. It just came out. The headline title, to minimize harms and maximize benefits of social media to adolescent health, new report recommends setting industry-wide standards, new protections against harassment. I am going to I'm going to do a couple things. I was going to say I'm going to read the whole thing. I think I might, but I think I'll also download the whole thing and maybe I'll query it using ChatGPT and these tools, you know, for summaries and for assistance. But one of the things that I think is very positive is this is not a throw away your phone. Phones are absolutely evil. The web is horrible in every way. It's saying that there have been real mental health harms to social media platforms and mobile access to those, but there's also been important benefits. And so we need to recognize the impact these are having on adolescent brains, on adult brains, and we need to make some adjustments both in our personal lives and then also from a regulatory standpoint, as we talk about as the tech correction. I just think this is a fantastic article. So this may be one they'll have some more comments on later. Again, like this is why it's so cool to hang out with people who are using AI tools who suggest things, because even talking about like Notebook LM, we could take this report and some other reports and we could put those into a Notebook LM and then we could ask it questions and just wow. And we've talked for an hour and 2 minutes. All right. Well, we kind of stole your thunder for your Geek of the Week, Jason, and Heather sort of, she shared Classcraft Mizzou, which isn't the University of Missouri, by the way, MIZOU.com, and Snorkel. You want to comment about Copilot and Suno?
It's not even Copilot that it was, there was a tool that I wanted to share that's now available in Copilot that is stupid and amazing. It's called Suno, and what Suno does is generates 30-second clips of music, and that's nothing new, right? There have been music generators really for the last 40 years, but this one's a little different for two reasons. The first one is that it will also generate lyrics and then create the 30 seconds with someone singing the song. And I was trolling my partner in crime at my day job, Mike Agostinelli, by sending him punk rock songs about the Montana Digital Academy. And so it's built directly into Copilot now, so it can generate songs, but you can also just go to Suno. I think it's app.suno.com and sign
in. Dot AI, yeah.
So, I'm sorry, AI. Thank you. And it will generate those songs for you. So I can do something like a 60-second, a 1960s folk song about the delights of raspberry Kool-Aid, or really whatever crazy stuff you want to come up with, and it will generate that for you. And the video generation is starting to also become as impressive as the level of let's say Midjourney in mid 2023. But you know, it's not just limited to images and text. There's also cool music stuff too.
And the content moderation issues around this, and the age stuff and all. I mean, it is, we've been in the Wild West for a while digitally, and we certainly are today. Two quick ones. A new Chrome browser extension I just found. I don't know if you've noticed how YouTube doesn't always tell you the date of the video. This one will do that for you. So it's called the Show YouTube Video Upload Date Extension. And it's also always valuable sharing this with students or with, you know, colleagues or whoever. This has 10,000 users and good ratings, so you want to be careful whenever you're installing something, including Chrome extensions. But anyway, that's just a quick little thing that's been helpful for citing websites, YouTube videos in like a blog post. That's how I found it. And then this is a book that I just started listening to this week over the break on Amazon. Chris Bale founded the Polarization Lab. That I think is at Duke. You know, I got to get this right. He's written a book, and it's his book. Okay, so this is the Polarization Lab, and yes, at Duke University. I don't want to misquote. It's been around for a little while. Fascinating. Sadly, most of the online tools they've created were broken when the Twitter API changed, but they've got other things. His book, which was published in 2021, is called Breaking the Social Media Prism, How to Make Our Platforms Less Polarizing. And so all the discussion that we have about the tech correction and impacts of social media platforms, I'm in the chapter now where he's talking about how we might engineer platforms to bring us together rather than polarize us. But there's just some really, really excellent stories, anonymized, of course, of the ways in which polarization has impacted us at multiple levels, and how social media intersects with that. So, Dr. Nifer, where can people find you if they want to follow up from tonight's engaging discussion?
Yeah, I left Twitter, so I'm kind of on Mastodon, but I just talked to Wes there. I would like to say, though, that I do have a website up now. It's AIcentrist.com. It's still mostly a template, but because I've got some work to do. I had to teach myself a new WordPress framework. It was a whole thing. So I will be posting there more regularly. And because I just copy everything Wes does in hopes of being more successful in my life, I will at some point be AIcentrist.com/after, so that if I'm speaking, you have a place to go to find out where to find me on the internet.
That is awesome. Hey, and don't forget, ChatGPT can help you with your coding. So, yes. Heather, how about you? Where can folks find you online if they'd like to follow you or connect with you?
Well, I've been online so long that, you know, we were anonymous because we didn't want to be known. So most people
know
me as Teched Out Teacher. If you search around for Teched Out Teacher or Techno Teacher on Twitter, Instagram, Threads, those kinds of places, you can find me there under some format, or just put my name in, as my fifth grade students will tell you. If you type in Dr. Heather Kaiser in Google, oh my gosh, she pops right up. You have a huge digital footprint, they say. Oh my goodness. Because of course we talk about our digital footprint.
There you go. And you're on LinkedIn. Jason and I are finding LinkedIn.
I'm all over the place.
Very good. All right. And I'm Wes Fryer at wesfryer.com/after. We want to thank you for tuning in to this edition of the EdTech Situation Room. I don't know that we mentioned it, but all of our past episodes, after our malware encounter, have been restored to our website. So you should be able to, in whatever your favorite podcatcher is, access both audio and video versions of our show. But you can also just follow us on YouTube, on Facebook, and you can follow us on Mastodon. But edtechsr.com is where you can get all of those links. And we welcome you to join us live, if you're able to, most Wednesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern. And whatever that might translate to in your locale. So we want to thank Dr. Heather Kaiser for joining us live and also for joining us for the EdTech Playdate. You can find all of the links to the resources that we've talked about in the show notes for tonight. So wishing everybody a good, happy new year. Stay savvy, stay safe, and go out there and play with these AI tools.
Night.
Good night.